Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Third hour, Darren Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Smoother than smooth. That pretty much sums it up for our next guest, Mike Doc Emmerich. Legendary voice, National Hockey League, friend of the show. We've always enjoyed our chats with him. His book, Off Mike. He just recently retired, of course, with Kevin Allen, a guy that we talked about earlier on the show. Doc, I think Kevin Allen has been on with us probably at least 300 times or more over the years. That was probably a safe estimate. It's probably more than that. But anyway, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you as always.
It is good to talk to you. And when you have Kevin on, you have tapped into so much knowledge. I mean, that's 35 years of experience as a writer for USA Today and the time following that, let alone his time that he spent covering hockey in Port Huron, Michigan, and watching it growing up. So you've got probably almost half a century of his experience following it. So good for you. He's a good guy to have as a regular, isn't he?
He certainly is. You doing a book, that's got to be one of the easier things you've ever done, right? You've got stories to tell? Yeah, I think you've got stories to tell. We've learned that over the years.
Yeah, pardon me for interrupting. Yeah, the easiest thing happened when I turned it over to Kevin. I tried to write this thing for 6 years. And so during the Nashville Predators series with the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2017, I ambushed that guy coming out of a morning press conference during the Stanley Cup final. And I said, I know you've done like 14 or 15 books with people. And I am struggling, and here we are approaching another summertime that will probably be an empty summer for me because I've spent so many summers trying to put a book together. Can you help me do this? And he smiled, and he said, of course. And so it's amazing how fast everything went together. As soon as Kevin got his hands on a ream of paper that I had written and tried to assemble some of the stories and clean them up, not necessarily because they were salacious, but because they just weren't written very well. And then we sat down with a tape recorder on three sessions, and he put it together in the form that you have access to today. So God bless Kevin. Otherwise, there would be no book, and I'd still be wondering what was going on in trying to assemble all of this.
When you've been doing it as long as you have, and you've crossed paths with so many people over the years, and you have so many stories to tell, but sometimes, like, when you sit down and make yourself try to remember all this stuff, it's not that easy. Is that some of the complications that you found over those 6 years that you were talking about, just trying to remember everything that you would try to squeeze and put into this book? What were those challenges?
Kevin and
like?
I have actually joked about it since the book came out that we should do another one called What I Forgot or something like that, because there are a lot of other stories. He said, you know, we should just do a book on minor league stories, because there are some in this one and there are some NHL stories too. But because he spent some time covering minor league hockey, and so did I, and then he's had 34 years covering the NHL with USA Today before he went the way of a lot of seasoned reporters who worked for long-time newspapers on a daily basis. The sad story of daily newspapers is that they tend to let guys that are very experienced and have covered their beat for all those years go for guys that don't hit the budget line as badly. And he was very gracious about it and didn't complain, but I wish he were still doing it today, with all due respect to the guys that are left behind, because he brought so much to it. But the main thing is that we feel like we could probably do another one or two just in the in what the two of us have in our warehouse of stories. But he did help me immeasurably, and I hope people enjoy this. And I should point out, and this is, I guess I'm selfishly doing this, that whenever you buy a book, if you like it, we would be really happy. If you don't like it, recognize that the money you invested, whatever comes to me, goes to the Hands-On Care of Animals. And so it's not lining my pockets, but it's sure going to make the life of dogs, cats, ducks, turtles, almost anything you can think of a lot better, because the people that we know of that aren't profiting from this but just go out and do rescues of these creatures and take them to veterinarians that we know that don't really benefit from this either, but out of the goodness of their heart, sometimes after they lock the key, turn the key in the door and close up their shop for the night and then go to work on these other rescue creatures out of the goodness of their heart, that's where this money goes to. NBC took care of me for a lot of years, so we don't have to worry with our fingers crossed right now about anything, but we can help out people that might have a surgery that needs to be done that is tough for them to afford, or do things anonymously to help them out or to help out the rescue of creatures. They're God's creatures too, just like human beings are, and so if we can help, we try to.
I watch Northwood's Law and Lone Star Law on Animal Planet, so I know what you're talking about, because they find animals all the time that that are in need of care, that are out in the wild, and they take them to these people that are just saints, and they just fix them up and set them free again. And it's like, to what you're talking about, there's just so many people that do so many great things for animals to help them. I just thought of those shows whenever you were saying that. This year,
we watch.
You watch those shows?
Like you do. We watch Dr. Pohl, and we watch the Alaskan Doctor.
Yep.
We have two TVs in our living room, and in the past, and maybe it will be the same again, I'll still be watching hockey on mine, and my wife will be watching one of those vet shows. And it is hard to see one of them that doesn't make it. You realize that that's life too. Veterinarians deal with five times the death that the regular physicians do, but also they help a lot. And so you recognize that there are a lot of upsides to that skill too. But anyway, I guess I've gotten us off the track here, but just recognize that's where the cash goes. And Kevin has two dogs. We have two dogs and some horses, and we really do like those creatures running around, and they bring us a lot of laughter.
Mike Doc Emrick on the line with us. Little did we know on New Year's Eve in 2019 that as we sat there in Dallas and we were doing a four-hour radio show ringside getting ready for the Winter Classic with the Predators and the Stars, and the awesome conversation and time spent with you. We talked about this when you announced your retirement. Little did we know, one, that was going to be your last season, but more importantly, what was just around the corner with this thing called a pandemic and COVID-19. We had no idea. And that great event that had 80,000 plus people there on January 1, what was it like going through and seeing this season that we've never seen before, shortly after our visit in Dallas?
It was odd, wasn't it? I mean, it was odd for all of us to experience in any sport that you can mention, and all of the sports that you see around Nashville, in addition to hockey. I think the one thing that we all missed, I mean, I've seen Major League so many times, and it was on last night. I had it on part of the way, but you know what? I bypassed it and waited later to see Field of Dreams again, just because I love that the guys coming back from the great beyond and playing baseball in a field in Iowa. And I was going, my wife talked to me about maybe making a trip out there, but I don't think it's going to be this next year. Hopefully we'll be able to drive out there and see that spot. But
do you know, Doc, that Pete Weber and Jerry Helper texted me last night about the Jets Patriots game? And you know what I told them? I said, I got bored. I turned away. I'm watching Major League on Showtime. I think that's what you're referencing.
And yeah, and you keep thinking that maybe Vukovic is going to get some wood on one of those last pitches from Charlie Sheen, but it doesn't happen, right? But he back then you could spit on the plate, and he sure does a lot of that. I don't know how many times I've seen that. Anyway, I've gotten off the track again here, and my fault. But to anticipate that, I think the one thing that I missed the most, and it occurred before we did the last game on the 11th of March, was that the locker rooms were off limits. And so you couldn't go and sit and talk to players because they're really the joy of this sport. They're the product to begin with, but we're conduits between the fans and the players. And the fans are always interested in the players and learning more about them. And that's what we can deliver. But you can't deliver it if you can't go sit and talk to them in those moments after practice or on the off days, when they have some time to give to you. And so that was the change, and of course it was perpetuated all during August and September when they put on that tremendous Stanley Cup playoff. But we were all in the same boat. It was all going to be electronic, and we knew that. And I sure hope that that changes back to where we someday get access to the athletes and get to actually be in same proximity with them and talk to them again. Whether we have to wear masks or not, I wouldn't care if I were still working, but that was the one thing that I missed the most, and I think it was the strangest part about all of this. But the upside was the responsibility of these guys to have, 33,000 COVID tests, including that one final week when the Predators were in Nashville and the other 23 teams were in their cities and they were going back and forth between their homes. And everything there was perfect, too.
We're talking to Mike Doc Emrick. He has got a book out that you're going to want to read. I just got my hands on it, Doc, and I started sinking my teeth into I can't wait to read more of it. But just in skimming it, I some things jumped out at me towards the beginning. You told a great anecdote, which I think captures Barry Trotz so well. The wisdom that he's always had, the talk he had with Alex Ovechkin, and of course we can relate having, you know, been around him for so long here. But that's really what you love getting at here. When you start telling these anecdotes, it really brings out what makes, you know, the hockey community special.
How much time do you have?
Well, we've got time.
No. I mean, do you have like a minute and a half?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Let's pretend that you are Ovechkin and you have just gotten married 2 days before and your team lost the playoffs again to the Penguins.
Ooh.
And so you've just gotten married and your coach was invited to the wedding and he didn't go to the reception because if you're the coach, you don't go to a reception with a bunch of your players, right?
Right, that's smart.
So you're coaching the Washington Capitals and the team is going to change before next fall. Some of the guys aren't going to be brought back again. Now, before you go back to Washington, if you're Barry Trotz, you want to have one last word with your captain before he goes on his honeymoon. And Barry told me this story before the Stanley Cup final in 2018, before Game 5, that the Capitals were going to win and become Stanley Cup champions. And here is the story, and I recorded Barry's words and transcribed them into the book on page 18. I began by explaining to him that next year is going to be tough. There's a lot of disappointment in Washington, Alex, a lot of energy lost. We're going to lose a lot of players this summer. You're going to have to dust yourself off. You didn't have a good regular season last year. The game's changing. There's a lot of people doubting you. I know you're a good player, but you're going to have to reinvent yourself. You'll have to train differently. You're going to have a different thought process. You're going to have to spend more time preparing, not less. You're not going to be able to take nights off. It's hard to be hungry when you're full. If you're hungry, you're going to be able to do these things, retraining yourself and becoming the athlete I know you can be. Alex was 31 at the time. Last part. Alex, you've inspired so many kids to play. They want to be Alex Ovechkin. That's your legacy. The Stanley Cup and awards, those are nice, but those don't define the kind of person you are and how you play. You're going to have a great legacy. You're going into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot, so enjoy playing, enjoy being the athlete you can be. In the first two games of the next regular season, he scored 7 goals with 2 back-to-back hat tricks. He was the first player in the league's 102-year history to do that. 8 months later, he was hoisting the Stanley Cup over his head and handing it to his coach. Probably wasn't an easy chat to have with the captain of the team 2 days after his wedding. But then Alex went on his honeymoon, and Barry flew back to Washington. And then the next fall, he had those 7 goals in the first two games. And then about 9 months later, whatever it was, he won the Stanley Cup. And he was a pretty happy guy, and they still talk about how the Capitals celebrated that. But that's the legacy of the guy who came into Nashville, and I'll never forget what he told me. He said, "I just wanted to get through the year. I was an untried coach in a non-traditional market. I just wanted to get through the first year." And he had 15. Pretty good.
Wow. That is really great perspective. Mike, I just want to pick your brain about, because there's so many guys, and you've talked about, this has been a passion of yours, trying to help along those that want to get into the business, whether it's play-by-play or even other aspects of just wanting to, as you say, get the pass, right? Just be given the media credential and have a job to do. And you talk about being your first professional season as a play-by-play guy at Port Huron, a low-level minor league team for the Red Wings, and honing the craft of learning how to call and develop your own unique style. Take us back to those days when you're just starting and you're trying to figure out what's my unique way? How do I develop my style? Because everybody says the same thing about you. You have a style that really cannot be imitated by anybody else.
Well, when you begin, and I've asked coaches the same question, especially when they're first or second year coaches in the NHL, how do you describe your style? And they almost always say, "I'm a hybrid of the guys that I played for. I took the best of all of them until I could," and then eventually they'll say that they became their own guy. And I think that's the way we all are when we get started. We sort of imitate a collection of the guys that we listened to and some of the things that they liked, that we liked about them. And so that was the case with me. And so the first of those 47 years of doing play-by-play, I was probably a combination of the guy I'd listened to in Fort Wayne, Bob Chase, and maybe, though I hadn't heard Danny Gallivan in Montreal or Gene Hart in Philadelphia, they were two influences of mine, but not until later on when I first heard them. So I probably sounded somewhat like the guy I heard in Fort Wayne, and then I would bring in some things of my own as I got a little more confidence. But in the early years, as Barry Trotz said, you just want to get through the year and not make too many mistakes and not get run out of town. And so I spent 4 years there and 3 in the American League in Portland, Maine, and then graduated to the NHL, and that was where I was fortunately able to stay. But yeah, in those first few years, I always tell rookie announcers to save their first game. And then if they get in 5 years or 10 years, every once in a while, haul out the first game and listen to it again. They'll have a good laugh, but it'll also give them perspective on not only where they once were, but how far they've come.
Well, one more on the craft, too, because I think the more that people hear as they've grown up with it, and now we're on our second generation of having the team here, the more you realize that hockey is so unique because it's so fast and there's a randomness. And it's so hard to know exactly what happened in real time until you go back. And sometimes you have to watch a play 2, 3, 4 times to know exactly how a puck got in or stayed out. So how did you come to grips with that? Because every announcer wants to get everything right. But you know over time there's going to be plays that are almost impossible to see. So how did you try to balance and evaluate yourself of what are errors that I can live with, and how do I minimize the errors as much as possible?
That's a good question. And I would still startle Eddie Olczyk by slamming my hand down on my 3-ring binder and making a loud noise in the press box if I misidentified a guy. Or if, when I first started in the NHL in 1980, I was in Philadelphia, and Bill Barber, the high-scoring left winger, would come down the wing and blast one, and it would beat the goalie over his glove hand and go in. Well, anybody can call those. But goals aren't scored that way much anymore. There are almost always deflections off of one of the five guys standing in front of the goaltender, usually two from one team and three from the other. And sometimes you don't know who it hit, and you just have to wait. And so it's an imperfect science at best, and you have to live with the fact that you aren't going to get every call perfect. One of the other things that helps is to have somebody with a goal scorer's eye like Eddie Olczyk watching, and sometimes he will point on his roster sheet to the guy that he's pretty sure got a piece of it or had it hit him on the way in. One of the drawbacks of how generous NBC was with me in preserving my health by allowing me to call all four rounds at home, one of the drawbacks was that the camera would move on shot, as the naked eye would not. I mean, your eye would move, but your head would not if you were in the arena. However, at home, you would have to follow a slap shot, which would be going fast, and the camera would move with it. So you would not be clear if it changed direction who it hit. But there would be a way that sometimes they could communicate very quickly with me from Eddie who it hit in front of the net, because he could pick that off being live in the arena. So there were some times that still he could help me with that, even though I was 2,000 miles away from Edmonton at the time.
We're talking to Mike Doc Emmerich, the legendary announcer. His book, Off Mike, is available now, and he's called it a career from the broadcasting booth. So I do wonder, why was now the right time, and when did you know that this was going to be your last season?
I think sometime in the third round, when NBC had allowed me to stay through the third and fourth rounds at home rather than insisting that I go to Edmonton, they granted me that. And that assured me pretty much that my health would be continually protected by staying at home. And I realized, I don't know why I didn't figure it up before, you know, there was one time, too, at some point during these playoffs, and I can't even remember which round, Brian Boucher was talking about Ken Dryden, the legendary goaltender, Hall of Famer, and six Stanley Cup wins and all of that. And I realized Ken Dryden was not was a rookie, and Brian Boucher hadn't even been born yet. But when he was a rookie, I actually was covering the Pittsburgh Penguins for an evening newspaper in Pittsburgh, and he showed up with the Montreal Canadiens, played a game, and beat the Penguins one night. He was a rookie, and that was my first of 50 years following hockey, and particularly the NHL. And the next year I was at Bowling Green calling games, the first of 2 years there, and then 47 years doing pro hockey. And so I'd been able to see a lot of things. I was still healthy. My wife was still healthy. We were starting to enjoy a lot more time because NBC was not insisting that I do all of the games during the regular season that they were carrying. I was just doing a game a week. And it was 40 years of doing NHL games and 60 years since I saw my first ever game. So there were a lot of round numbers there, too. And we had just come through COVID, and I was fine. And a lot of older people than I, if you can imagine, had told me that I would know when it was the right time to wrap it up. And during that third round, at some point, it just came to me that it was the right time. So that's it. There's no backstory. There's no dissatisfaction with anybody. It just seemed like the right time.
Have you thought, as we wrap this up in 2021, when action does begin again and there is a new season, how strange that'll be for you watching?
It probably will, but there again, we've had some lockouts in which I've been at home for long periods of time and always been congratulated by my wife for relearning where the light switches are, that I have had some stretches where I've been able to watch games when I was still active. And it will probably be different when I realize that I'll be watching games when I'm not required to be watching two particular teams that are next on my list, that I'll just be watching games to enjoy watching them and hearing other people work. NBC is going to allow me to do essays once in a while, which will be fun to still have my hand in and still get a team jersey and be on the roster, but it will be different, and retirement will be different, and I don't know how good at it I'll be because I've never done it before, but we'll see.
It'll be different for us, too, not hearing your voice. You're a class act. It's always been really cool to talk with you over the years. I hope this isn't the last time. I hope we continue our chats. But thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck with the book. I know you're going to do – it's going to do great. I know I want to read it. All of us want to read it, and we will. So thanks for doing this, Doc. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's great of you to call, and I always have a special place in my heart for Nashville because of the memories that I had there. We used to have that booth way up the top. During the playoffs, they were able to get me a location further down, but some of the fans that I got to know way up top were a lot of fun to talk to. And I'll never forget the calendar they came out with that had Jason Arnott holding a huge bulldog on the cover. And that was, I still have that because he played in New Jersey, of course. And I remember talking to him about how heavy that dog was. Jason was a big, strong guy, but the dog was about as heavy as he was, I think.
You'll be glad to know they still do those, yep, those calendars.
Ah, so good.
Yep. Doc, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Continue to be safe.
Thank you. You too.
Mike Doc Emrick, legendary voice of the National Hockey League, with Kevin Allen, forward by Eddie Olczyk. Off mic, how a kid from basketball-crazy Indiana became America's NHL voice. Really cool stuff, as always. We'll switch gears when we come back. We'll talk to longtime Colt center. Now he's on ESPN. Jeff Saturday on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donica and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Boy, what an hour we are having. We go from legendary hockey voice Mike Doc Emrick, who's come out with a book and just recently retired after many, 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 many decades behind the mic. We now go to longtime Colt center Jeff Saturday, who's now a part of ESPN's programming, Get Up. This show tends to watch Get Up before our show every day, and Jeff Saturday is now on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff, how you doing?
Fantastic. How you doing today?
We've got one request for you. You know, it's one thing as fans of the show that you're on, it's one thing for Rex Ryan to come out with his outlandish comments every day. We can stomach those, but the dancing stuff has got to stop, Jeff. It's got to stop.
I'm not sure what you call that. I think Swagoo and I had the conversation. He set white dudes dancing back at least 25 years. But, you know what I mean? So just, it just wasn't pretty. But that whole crossover idea in the past, I think it was the pass that got me when he was pretending, and it was like a two-hand, you know, it wasn't even a bounce pass. He was like pushing it out. It was so bad. Anybody who hadn't seen it, go back, YouTube, or whatever you got to do to find it, because it will make you laugh, man. Good heavens, that was a good one.
I thought Marcus was generous with 25 years, honestly. I thought it was further back than that when I saw it. When you see this Colts team that the Titans are going to see two times in the next 3 weeks, when you look at this year's Colts team, what do you see?
Yeah, I see a defensive-driven football team that struggles offensively. You know, I would compare them to the Bears. You know, in the kind of the way I look at it. Probably a better offensive production, you know, than the Bears, but still kind of in that category. I mean, if you see what teams are doing, as they're kind of loading up the box. I mean, people have talked about Taylor, you know, their second round pick not having, you know, not kind of meeting expectations quite yet, or the offensive line, but they're facing a lot of stacked boxes because teams are challenging Rivers in a really, really decimated by injury wide receiver core that's kind of gone in and out. You know, guys will get healthy, then get banged up. So it's kind of the ebb and flows of injuries this year. But they've challenged Phillip Rivers to beat them. And against good teams, he has not. Against you know, teams without winning records, they've done well. But 1-2 against, you know, against good opponents. And obviously these next 3 weeks are really going to define the season, not only for the Colts, but for the Titans as well. I mean, you know, this is for the division and for potentially a home field playoff game. And so when I look at the Colts, that's kind of what I see. I see a team that's got to win defensively, which they can definitely do, but a team that needs to generate some more points to give their defense some relief.
Interesting. Titans just coming off a win over the Bears. So it's interesting that you describe them as a little bit like Chicago. Okay. Through Jeff Saturday's eyes, what do you see when you watch the Titans?
You know, it's funny. If you had asked me before the season, you know, to define the teams, I would not have done it this. I would not have said that the Colts were going to be a defensive, you know, kind of a defensive beast, really, and they have been. I mean, they played better than I thought they would defensively. But I would have never thought that the Titans would be more of an offensive football team. And that's really what you see when you turn on the film, right, whether it's Tannehill and big plays. But defensively, they don't scare you, and which is not typical of a Mike Vrabel type defense, right? And when you think about pressure in the quarterback, and I know they've been banged up. I know they got rid of Beasley and Clowney's, you know, knee injury, but they don't create really pressure from their front four very well. You're just not that intimidated. And I know they went out and got Desmond King, which will help them on the back end to help benefit them. But I think they are a team that lives in possession football, right? Offensively, that's what they want to do, is possess it and keep it and do their best to play complimentary ball to help their defense. But I mean, if you're being really honest with game tape, their offense has made some big plays. And I'm not saying that they're you know, a juggernaut. They're not the Chiefs. I'm not saying it that way. But if you just look at their team in totality, they're depending more on their offense to win games right now than their defense.
You're the perfect guy to ask, because you spent so much time on the offensive line. You understand that dynamic and how that works. The last two opponents for the Titans, Cincinnati and Chicago, have had worlds of problems at the offensive line, makeshift offensive lines, guys playing for the first time, guys coming off the practice squad. And so the Titans have been pretty lucky, even though it didn't work out in Cincinnati, playing against some offensive lines that were having major struggles. Well, Taylor Lewan has been lost for the season, so they haven't had him the last three games. Now there's, you know, question about Roger Saffold. So things are starting to mount on the Titans' offensive line. Can you just talk about just what it's like when, especially this year, when you see so many times or so many teams, Jeff, around the league that are having to shuffle guys all over the offensive line, and what that is like, the challenges it creates, plugging guys in, plugging, playing, and trying to get them to stay at a certain level?
Yeah, there's not a position on the field where consistency is more important than the offensive line. I mean, if you think about just positional consistency, right? You want to play next to the guy beside you. That continuity really matters. You get accustomed not only to calls and communication, but against, you know, pass offs and the way that you fit up. It's not unlike how quarterbacks and receivers talk about, hey, I knew where he was going to do before he did, or you know, we see it through the same eyes. That's no different. And so when you start, you talked about the Bengals a couple of weeks ago for the Titans. I think only one of their starters was a preseason expected starter. So to your point, that's kind of going around the league right now. And with injuries and obviously with COVID and all the different things and guys getting put on these reserve lists from time to time, it has been very tough for teams. And I give young guys credit. There's been a lot of guys who have stepped up and played well. But for the Titans in particular, especially against this defensive front that the Colts bring, they will bring pressure. Now that is one thing they have done a good job, and it may not always look in sacks, but they will push the pocket. They will make quarterbacks uncomfortable, move off their spot, have secondary reads, kind of pump fake, do those kinds of things. they do a really good job. And then when not, you know, whether it's Darius Leonard, you know, these guys, they can bring pressure. And so as I look at these things, this is not the week where you want uncertainty at your O-line, right? You want as much continuity and guys understanding and communicating with each other, because the last thing you want to do is try to go block these guys, a bunch of one-on-ones. That will not look good for this offensive line nor this offense.
Talking to Jeff Saturday, the longtime center for the Indianapolis Colts. You can catch him on Get Up, tremendous analyst for the NFL. Jeff, along those lines, you're mentioning the Titans have issues on the offensive line, but they have Derrick Henry. They have a tremendous rushing attack. And not only are they playing the Colts on Thursday, then they come back with the Ravens, another elite team at stopping the run, and then they get the Colts again. When you were with all those great teams for the Colts, you played elite defenses. What was the key to not psyching yourself out and overcompensating, going away from your strengths, and just having the mentality and the confidence to say, okay, we're playing a great defense, but we're a great offense. We're not going to change too much of what we're going to do, and we have to stay with our bread and butter and be successful.
That's right. You know, don't reinvent yourself because of how good you think they are, right? I mean, that was what we always talked about it's not an offense of the week. It's who you are. It's what your identity is. And for the Titans going in, they need to run right at you. I mean, I would say that the thing for me is what you see teams do is they try to create these new runs. And I'm not talking about wrinkles. I mean, obviously everybody has wrinkles in their game plan and little one-offs, you know, and jet sweeps and that kind of thing. But how do you make your money, right? You make your money by giving it to Henry early in the game. And even if it's not paying dividends in the first quarter, not paying dividends in the second quarter, he's starting to kind of show up a little bit in the third quarter, is unless you are totally out of the game or totally taking out of being able to run the ball because of score, you got to stick with it. Like it's not going to be pretty, because in the fourth quarter, it's really where a guy like Henry separates himself. And we have seen this time and time again from him and from this team, is, you know, they'll bang away on you and bang away, and the next thing you know, Henry's running away from an entire defense at the beginning of the fourth quarter or midway through the fourth quarter, and he's running over somebody. But it's all because of what they've done in the first quarter. Because if you keep defenses fresh, if you go out there and decide, hey, we're going to throw it around the yard and we're going to do it this way, and on those D linemen, those linebackers stay fresh and they don't have to pursue and they don't have to run, in the fourth quarter, they're not nearly as afraid to take that on. When guys are beat down and tired and they've been laid on and, you know, getting off of piles and all those kinds of things, it truly makes a difference. And so I don't overthink it, right? I mean, there's a principle, you know, the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, stupid. That's the deal. Keep it simple. Go back to what you do and what you do well and continue to do it. And unless you're forced to come out of it, be who you are and let that identity win you the game.
As you can imagine, with the expectations high and the struggles of the Titans defense, there's sort of the question of can they get it fixed, knowing they have a really good offense, but they've got to be better on D. If I recall, Jeff, you guys had great teams every year with Peyton and company, and the offense was always going to do their thing. But when you guys won it all, if I recall, there were some struggles on the defense, but it seemed to get better at the right time. So how does that work, and do you think that can be the formula? Do you think the Titans can figure it out to be good enough on defense?
Absolutely. Listen, this is a good football team, man. I mean, when you turn the tape on, you know they got the dudes, right? I mean, when you talk about the guys who can make it happen, they definitely have a team that's built to be able to win and challenge big games, right? So this is not going to be a, hey, it's just not our year. And to your point, in Indy, the year we won the Super Bowl, I mean, we gave up, I want to say, almost 300 yards to Jacksonville, maybe a couple weeks before the season was going to end. I think Fred Taylor, I want to say, and maybe MJD, maybe Jones-Drew, both of those guys pulled hamstrings because they had gotten so much use and hitting their head on the goalpost from scoring so much that everybody was like, oh, there's no way this Colts team can do it. And I remember Dungy coming back to the locker room after the game and just saying, hey, it was really a ton about our pre-snap alignment. And I can remember even thinking to myself, hey, this is nuts, right? But but the truth was, the devil's in the details, and that's going to be no different for this Titans team. They will have guys. They just got to make sure that they're following the details of what Vrabel's putting out there. And look, he's an excellent football coach. I talked about, you know, he's in the consideration of coach of the year. Like I like the way Mike takes care of this football team and all the things that he can go through. So he'll have them ready, and they are fully capable of making a run. And I can tell you this, they make it to the playoffs, whether they win this division or they get in as a wild card or whatever. This ain't the draw you want. Like you saw that last year in the playoffs. This is a team that will dogfight, and they will get after you. And you know, they are about it. And so I think everybody understands when you go against the Titans what the expectations are. It's a tough physical team, and that wins a lot of games late December, January, and February.
We're talking to Jeff Saturday, former Colts center, and now with ESPN doing things on the media side. Something that, you know, we continuously have to watch here in Nashville is the wear and tear of Derrick Henry. They gave him the new contract. He is the, you know, the catalyst that makes this offense go. You played with a lot of running backs in your career, whether it's Adai or Edgerrin James. You know, the year you won the Super Bowl, you also had Rhodes on that team. But how much have you, or what do you see from Derrick Henry and how they're using Derrick Henry that makes you think, okay, there's still some tread left on this tire. They got to use him as much as they can, but also balancing of keeping him healthy and keeping him fresh as they go down the line.
Yeah, look, I think when you, I mean, this is not a sport where, you know, you can just give guys a day off, right? I mean, you wish that were the case. The only way you can do that is if you build it in towards the end of the season, because you won so many games, you're going to have basic buys before anybody else gets there. But I think the way they use Henry is very productive, and I don't think you really change the formula, right? When you start thinking about the future, you know, I said this a ton about Lamar Jackson, and you know, there are certain things that you're really good at, and there's a certain amount of time you're going to be really good at them. If you start projecting out to, well, we gave this guy a contract, and we really need him to be a good running back in 3 years, you probably didn't have a good plan to begin with, right? We ain't nearly as worried about 3 years from now as we are about this week against the Colts, and I think that has to be the focus. You manage reps, you manage fatigue, you do all those things. You know, in games that are out of hand, you can protect them. But when you're in the hunt, this is the time to let it rip and let it go. You know, you don't back down. There's no game management, because I do think you got to put your best out there and continue to put it out there, because ultimately you're not going to get to where you want to get, or you're going to make it so difficult on yourself on the back end, because of preservation, that it doesn't help you. And the only guy, I can say this, the only guy I've ever seen where they really managed a guy, Bob Sanders was a defensive player for us, a safety, who was staying injured, you know, shoulders and all kinds of things. And I remember Bill would hold him back, because he was kind of the last piece. I don't think that's the Derrick Henry conversation, right? He is the piece, right? He's not the last piece. He is the piece that you have to have. And so, you know, that's not one that you can kind of spell. He's the one you build it around. And ultimately the position he plays takes a ton of hits, but hopefully his body and the way that he handles himself, he can manage and give you the best towards the latter part of the season.
You brought up Mike Vrabel earlier and being in contention for coach of the year and what you've seen out of him. How much of Mike Vrabel, the player, that tenacity that he brought, you know, when you guys went up against the Patriots back in the day, how much do you see that has evolved into Mike Vrabel, the coach?
Oh, a ton, man. And listen, I got to know Vrabel through the Players Association as well. We both served on the executive committee together and did the negotiations with the CBA in 2011. And, you know, listen, you know, he's the same guy. This is not y'all know him from there, and you know, he is who he is, and he's not pretending. That's one of the things I appreciated most about him, and even as a player, right, is he played the game hard. He was a very intelligent player, right? He's going to study you and know you, But he's going to, you know, he's going to give you 100% of everything he's got. That's what you see in his teams. I think that permeates the locker room. He loves to have a good time. He's going to enjoy himself. He's going to laugh with you, but he's also going to call you out, man. If he's got to say a few choice words, he ain't afraid to do that either. So I think he kind of fits the bill of that Patriots defense back then. Because again, we always talk about Brady and Belichick. I can tell you right now, as an offensive player, their defense, I mean, it littered with perennial Pro Bowl or All Pro or Hall of Famers, man. I mean, those dudes were well coached and as well oiled a defense as I ever played. Knew where to be, when to be there, what to expect. I mean, they came ready to play each and every time you played them, and they were going to bring their best. And that's what he does as a coach as well.
Jeff Saturday, ESPN, longtime Colts center. Hey, we appreciate the time. Good to talk to you, and we'll do it again soon.
Had a blast. Appreciate it, fellas. Have a great one.
Yeah, absolutely. Also on Get Up, which is something that we watch quite a bit on this show. We'll have more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
We'll just keep this action-packed show moving right along. Fourth and final hour. We'll head over to West End. Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, coming up at 1 o'clock, and then followed by Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll talk college football with them as one game has already been postponed in the SEC, so we'll get into all that and more. Good stuff there from Jeff Saturday talking about the Titans and the Colts, and it looks like, looking at the Titans' transactions here in the last 15, 20 minutes, looks like, guys, they have added a kicker. They have added a defensive lineman, an offensive lineman, and all those guys are going to be on their practice squad. And let's see, I guess that's just about them. So they've added three guys to their practice squad. This is the constant shuffle that goes on with all the teams in the NFL. They've got these expanded rosters because of COVID, and this is where, honestly, some of these guys have shown up that we've talked about. Like, you feel like we turn on the Titans game every week, and we're like, oh, who's that?
Who?
Why are they playing so much? That was the case on Sunday, again.
But Borders, if they make a play.
Borders played 100% the snaps.
Yeah. If they make a play. And it's a good play. You're not saying who is that for the wrong reasons. Then you go, okay.
Well, that's true.
It's a nice surprise. And I don't think we talked with Teron yesterday. You know, Breon Borders, I think for the most part, he did all right. We weren't really calling him out on some bad plays. So if that's what you get. And I remember the conversation we had last week before, I think it was last week, before they cut Vic Beasley. I'd rather have the guy just trying to make it that's making, you know, league minimum, and he's just happy to be here and going out and giving it his all, making those type plays, than having to deal with the guy you're paying $9 million to that you're having to constantly motivate and just hope that you can get something out of him. And I think the Titans have brought in a lot of those guys that are able to, you know, that are – just happy to, you know, they're working at it. They're happy to be there. They're hungry.
I wonder how much this knee issue has affected Clowney to this point. You know, how much has he been playing through?
Been playing with it. Yeah, I that's a question I ask myself a lot. I don't think it was an issue at the beginning of the season, but I would have to think for the last couple of games. Remember when he left the game against the Steelers? I don't know if that's when it happened. But that's when it could have happened. Remember, he went down, and it looked like he might be done. They were worried about, oh, boy. And he actually came back in the game and finished the game, played the next week, but he played the lowest amount of snaps he had played the whole year. Remember the whole scuttlebutt we had in the first game? How much are you going to play him? How many snaps? Well, he had his lowest snap total against the Bengals. And then, of course, last week he couldn't go. So if I had to guess, it was a Steelers game where it where it happened, and then they tried to manage it during the Bengals game, and it wasn't – obviously, he didn't get any sacks, and they lost the game. The defense really struggled, and then last week he wasn't able to go. So that would be my best guess. So is it any better after a little extra rest? And will it be better? Let's say he can't go Thursday. Will it be better with another week's rest to where you feel like he can finish a game, finish a season? Or does something have to be corrected with a scope or, you know, some kind of surgical repair?
Or does this plague him all year?
Yeah. I think these are all the things that we wonder, that we don't get any info on. Unless somebody nationally has an in to the inner circle, that's the only way you find out about injuries these days.
Yep. Very true. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll come back. We'll head over to Weston to start the final hour. Right now I want to talk to you about this weekend's major golf tournament, along with pro and college football. Man, there is no shortage of a ton of action for you, and I've got the place for you. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook, wants to put you in the center of all that action. Celebrate Sunday's action. DraftKings is going to ensure all new users that you are covered up to $100. Yep, that's right. You bet. They cover you risk-free Sunday betting on all of Sunday's action. DraftKings will have special promotions and odds boost every day of this year's tournament in Augusta, Georgia. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you will ensure your Sunday bets up to $100. Once again, that code 1025GAME during a sign-up for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Risk-free coverage paid out and site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and you need help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No